In times of real trouble, elected officials rise to the occasion.
The only way to build a thriving economy is to set and enforce firm rules of the world.
They did not do enough. There was not a whole lot of stimulus of you know, actual infrastructure.
Is hyperinflation a successful outcome of what they're trying to do?
To just realize that these people don't know what's going on.
The strong rights theory we turn to today is libertarianism.
You don't have to use fiscal stimulus or monetary stimulus. There is a third way.
We don't know how other people should live, and you cannot organize a society.
The case for the free market, the case for liberty, and the case against statism.
Welcome, everybody, to the Christian Mullen Show on November 4th, 2013. Monday evening. A couple notes that I wanted to say before I get into the topic we're going to be talking about today. First off, I want to thank you guys who have been listening this early because on the site that I'm based off of for my podcasting, podomatic.com, over the weekend we shot up to like 40th overall in the news and politics section. It's one of the biggest podcast directories there is, so I'm extremely helpful. I know I haven't done one in like 3 or 4 days, so it went down to like 111th, I think I'm at right now. But as far as like that current day to be 40th overall out of the hundreds and hundreds of podcasts that are in that section, I really thank you guys. But I hope it's revealing that there is a demographic that's being kind of left out of discussions in the public square that I'm hoping I can reach out to. Second thing is we're going to have a couple of guests on this week. Yes, a couple of guests. We're going to have number one. We're going to have on Tuesday, tomorrow, we're having a fellow anarcho-capitalist on. His name is Fabian Lemos. He's from a student at the University of Delaware. And we're going to be discussing anarcho-capitalism tomorrow, which will be very fun. I'm really looking forward to having a discussion with a fellow anarcho-capitalist. We are few and far between here, especially in my demographic. So we're going to see how that goes. So make sure you check in tomorrow. Tomorrow evening, we'll have that posted up. And then later on in the week, we'll probably have another guest. I haven't confirmed it, so I don't want to reveal the person who it is yet until we have confirmed it. But I will let you guys know later on in the week what it is we will be discussing. So, as the topic of today, I've been having I had a hard time finding out what I wanted to talk about. And then I thought, since we're going to be talking about anarcho-capitalism tomorrow, we might as well get a surface understanding, a superficial understanding of where we're coming from and the principles we're basing off of. So you might hear some terminology tomorrow that it's not really explained. But here, what I want to talk about today is trying to at least lay the foundation for what the discussion for tomorrow will be. And that is, what is libertarianism? So, a lot of people who listen to this are young. They haven't had a lot of, you know, options as far as having opportunities to look into other possibilities as far as politics goes. So I want to answer a couple. I want to consider this like a frequently asked questions that I usually get. The most frequent questions I get from people wanting to know about libertarianism. So I have about 5 or 6 questions I just want to generally talk about and give you guys just an introduction to libertarianism, what our philosophy is, because it's often given this caricature by the media of what we believe. So I want to give a general idea of what it is from a libertarian and myself. And these are like the most frequently questions I get, because a ton of people ask me these 5 or 6, and I kind of want to just give quick explanations and rebuttals to them. So let's start off. First one is simply, what is libertarianism? What is, first of all, libertarianism is a philosophy. It's more than a political ideology. It's a philosophy that many people base their whole lives and ethics around. Simply, in the simplest terms, the libertarianism is based off of 2 axioms or principles that are really the 2 sides of the same coin. The first principle that we base all of our philosophy on is called the non-aggression principle. Now, it's self-explanatory. It means exactly how it sounds. It means that it is immoral and wrong to initiate the use of force onto another human being. So I can't go and punch you in the face, I can't go steal your property, all of that kind of stuff. I cannot do anything to you that is involuntary on your part. I cannot force you into doing anything. So that is the first principle. But the flip side is, because as soon as you say that, people say, well, okay, libertarians are pacifists, which simply is not true. We are not against violence when it comes to defending your property, right? So this is where the second principle and the flip side of the non-aggression principle comes in, and that is private property rights. We believe in strong private property rights, which means you own yourself, you own your body, you own your belongings, and no one can take that away from you. And basically, where as far as the belongings go, we believe, most libertarians believe in the homesteading kind of rule, where if you take natural resources and the nature and transform it, no matter what it be, you know, cut down logs and make a house, plant seeds and grow crops, anything where you're changing the natural resources, that becomes your property. As long as you're not, you know, going up to someone else's farm and taking their wheat, right? Because that's not your property. You have to do it yourself on your own. You're on a uninhibited land that's not owned by someone else, and take those resources that are not owned and transfer them, and they become yours. So that's where the property comes in. So the basic fundamentals are: we cannot initiate force onto someone else, but you can defend yourself from force if you are initiated against, right? So if I go up and punch someone in the face and take their jacket, Am I the aggressor? Well, we have to find out, right? We have to see, well, did that guy steal my jacket yesterday and I'm simply retrieving it? That's the distinction we have to make. And you cannot equate the non-aggression principle to pacifism, or, you know, being a pacifist. It's an understandable one, but you have to understand the flip side of which is private property rights. The second I get, probably even more popular than what is libertarianism, is: how do libertarians differ from conservatives, and liberals in American politics? Well, I guess the biggest difference is the word consistency. Libertarians are consistent. And it's kind of funny to see when you talk to liberals and conservatives, they always say that they're consistent and they believe in consistency until they meet a libertarian, and then they just change consistency to being idealist. So consistency is not a great word as far as the American politics goes, unless you're libertarian. And you can disagree with the consistency. You can say it's foolish to be, or naive to be consistent. But we do believe in consistency. So here's a few differences. First off, let's get a little disclaimer out there. The word liberal that we know as American politics today, which we associate with the Democrats or the left in American politics, the word liberal throughout its history has been very synonymous with libertarian. It means free. It means obviously liberal, free. It was synonymous with the libertarian viewpoint up to about, you know, 80 years ago, when it was taken over by, you know, the 30s and 40s and the progressives. And, many of the founding fathers, and, you know, if you've heard of Adam Smith and John Locke, they were what you called classical liberals. They are a step farther. They're not complete libertarians, but their mindset's almost, it's fairly libertarian. So that liberal actually was associated with libertarian until recent history. But as far as American politics goes, as far as the liberal, as a Democrat or in the left, libertarians, they take what the liberals would use. Liberals, what they do is they place all their faith in solving social problems and economic problems in the hands of the state, a government. They believe the government can solve gay marriage, abortion, be in control of that, have social finish, organize social problems, fix social problems, fix economic problems. And with libertarians, they take the faith out of the government and put it into the individual. So we believe that individuals can solve social problems opposed to using force with the government. So that's the biggest difference. I would just say the liberals are authoritarian and libertarians obviously are not. They're more individualistic. As far as conservatives go, which I will get in some distinguishments in the next question, but as far as conservatives go, the biggest difference I would say is, because conservatives are often believed to be free market as far as economics, which is a complete fallacy. Conservatives are not free market. They're for the rich. They're for corporations. They believe in, they take the free market, which is a great idea, and I think they really, because I was conservative at one point, they have good intentions, but they can't be consistent. They have to shut certain doors from letting them see the full view, instead of having specific ideas that are kind of right. They can't go all the way. They're very inconsistent. And the second thing with conservatives that is extremely different from libertarians, this is what they're most known for, I guess, from a public standpoint. This is what they always say libertarians are: a bunch of young kids who are for the few things I'm about to bring up. And what conservatives do, and they often speak of, you hear Rick Santorum or any neoconservative that is very faith-based, they say legislating morality, right? So they believe in, you know, anti-abortion laws, traditional marriage laws, prohibiting gay marriage and whatnot, all these social issues. They believe that it's their place to legislate morality and try to convince people, not convince, force people to act in certain ways that they believe is moral. What libertarians say is the idea of legislating morality is a complete oxymoron. It's a contradiction. It makes no sense. You cannot force morality because the act of force in itself is immoral. So if I force someone, you know, to not marry another man, if I'm a man and it say it's going to be a gay marriage, to force someone not to do that is not moral. It is immoral to force them. So what libertarians say is on all social issues is the government should be completely out of it. They should not be in gay marriage and it really any social issue. It's not their place. You know, the left often says and liberals say equal marriage is gay marriage laws, promoting gay marriage. The libertarians say no. Equal marriage is having the state not dictate what is love, what is marriage. It's none of their business. They should not be involved in the act of marriage. It has no relevance to them. They should be out of our business. They should be dealing with themselves and let us as individuals act and do what we need to do. That's not, as long as we're not forcing other people to do what we believe is right. And you have no right to define what marriage is. It's not your place as the state. It's the individual's place in their each and every home, each and every mind. It is our rights, not the collective state's rights. So that's the overwhelming thing on social issues. I left one out, which is abortion, which I will get to in the last issue that I have here. The second issue, which I was going to bring up with the conservatives, is war. I've talked about this a few times before, but libertarians are severely anti-war. I don't mean anti-war as in peace, right? We're not like the hippie peace movement. We have some shades of that, but we're not strictly anti-war. What we are against is, you know, occupying 190 countries with our troops and our bases and all of that, going into wars like Iraq and Afghanistan, initiating conflict, trying to nation build and build spread, you know, quote unquote democracy by throwing out leaders like as we know, I mean, we threw out Egypt, right, and then they had a dictator come in. So it's we end up having very negative results by you know, spreading quote democracy. So libertarians believe that we should stay out of other countries' business as far as a military standpoint is concerned. That cannot, it's often associated by especially neoconservatives, is okay, you are an isolationist. And I would say, no, you're an isolationist. If you believe that we can occupy every country against their will, and somehow that increases trade and, you know, interdependence economically in one another, I would say that's completely short-sighted, right? What libertarians believe is that, no, we don't believe that you should be isolationist. It's the exact opposite. We believe if we don't occupy countries and get in their foreign policy and try to spread democracy by overthrowing their governments that they democratically elected in some stances, we believe that the best solution to being, you know, interdependent is free trade. We believe in unprohibited free trade. That means no tariffs, anything that would prohibit the free trading between countries. So we believe the best way to be interdependent on each other is through free trade and not violence and war. The third topic I want to talk about as far as positioning is welfare programs. And this is where a lot of people kind of shut off because they've been taught a certain thing and they're so just thrown back by our position that they don't really want to look at what the statistics and truth is of the matter. As far as welfare programs go, and I mean welfare, I mean welfare, food stamps, social security, all of these safety nets. We believe that the government should not be involved in them. We believe it should be privatized. So we don't believe the government should be in control of a social security program or a welfare or food stamps program. We believe that should all be privatized. And I'll get into the reason as far as with the poor in a couple of questions, but that's our strict position. I would wait on a little bit until you can hear our reasoning for that. Number four, and the last position I want to talk about, is abortion. Now, abortion is one of the very few topics in the libertarian circles which is severely debated. There's a divide between we believe in strong human rights, but the question is, should the state be involved? And the question is, is abortion the initiation of force, right? Well, this is very kind of a sticky issue. One side of the argument is that abortion, a fetus is human life and they have rights that should be protected, and that aborting them is a violation of the right, so we have to have the state enforce anti-abortion or pro-life laws. The flip side of the argument from the other side of libertarians is that a fetus cannot possibly have human rights because the definition of an individual and human rights is that they can be dependent or independent. They can defend themselves. They have several rights that are obviously with all of us. And they say because a fetus is dependent on the mother to live, that it is not a human. And that they do not argue that whether it's life. They believe it's obviously life. But they do not believe it's a human being. It's not an individual. And that aborting it is simply not a violation of human rights. There's a kind of a small section that it's more of founded by Walter Block in the recent decade, which is that you are allowed to, because since this is dependent on you, you are allowed to eject the fetus, right? You are allowed to abort it, but you cannot kill it, right? You have to, you can take it out of your dependency because that's not a violation of your rights if they're dependent on you. Because if you're letting them out, you're not stopping anyone from helping him. So they believe that if you can abort the fetus and leave it there, if someone decides to come and pick it up and try to save it, they can do that, and that's not immoral because you are not using the initiation of force to prohibit them life, right? If you aborted them and then killed them, in their opinion, that is force, right? Because you're not allowing it to live. But if you abort it and then let anyone else take it and try to make sure it lives, then then you are allowed to do that. That is the third position. I honestly am in more of the in the second position as far as it is dependent, so it is not a human being, therefore it doesn't have rights that we would all have. But no matter what our opinions are, most libertarians, even if they believe that it is human life and they should be protected, they all believe, 99% believe that the state should not be involved in abortion, because what the state often does is it promotes abortion. If it legalizes it increases it, it subsidizes abortion, and then it taxes families, right? It taxes the productive use of families. It taxes. What I mean is a tax. I mean, if a single mother is on welfare compared to with a husband, they get substantially less welfare payments. And if you have more children than not, you're going to get more welfare payments. So the state at the same time subsidizes abortion by promoting it and having funding the Planned Parenthood, but at the same time it taxes people who are trying to have structured family planning. So it's the state, even if you believe abortion is life, in my opinion, it is far more destructive than the state. It's even if it's such an important topic as far as abortion should not be left in the hands of such a incompetent and just unreliable institution as the state is. Okay, now I want to go back a quick second to the welfare programs. And so this question I get often is, okay, so what about the poor? And a couple things you should know that you're not taught, and this is what many people don't understand, and I don't blame you because you're not taught it, and it's really unfair to you to have such a one-sided, but as far as the poor, the idea of poverty in a libertarian society, I want to say a couple points I want to bring up is, the first off, I will get into poverty or into charity and the social security and the safety nets as far as welfare goes, but just as a general overwhelming principle, as far as the poverty rate, so how many people are in poverty, I want to talk about for a second. At the beginning of 1789, and I've talked about this in other podcasts and videos, in 1789, the poverty rate was 95%. And we had no safety nets, we had nothing like that until, you know, the 30s and 40s. But as far as the welfare programs went, as far as, you know, food stamps and all of that, that started in the 1960s with LBJ and the Great Society programs. From 1789 to 1960, right? So what is that, 150 years, a little over? The poverty rate went from 95%. To a little over 20%, or a little under, depending what you look at. So around the 20s, the 22 to 18%. It dropped a little over 70% in 150 years. That is incredible. And I'll get into the reasoning for it in a second. And then when we got into all these welfare programs, what happened to the poverty rate? It virtually stagnated. The poverty rate has went down roughly 4 to 5 to 3% in the last, from 1960 to 2013. So in 50 years, so one third of the previous year, the previous segment between, you know, from the initiation or the creation of the United States in the 1960s, from 1960 to 2013, the poverty rate went down 5%. So if we went back, right, and we had all those programs at 1789, that 70% drop in poverty would have only been 15 if we kept on this rate. So if this was the other way around, right? Say that we had all those programs and went down 70% in 150 years, and then we got rid of all the Social Security, welfare, food stamps, and it only went down 5% in 50 years, that, you know what would happen? It'd be an outrage. We'd say, we need these programs back. But the facts are, it was the opposite was true. And the reason is because the state needs dependency. That's how they get their votes. The state is not a benevolent institution. It's simply not. They are bought and sold by special interests, which I will get to next. And they need dependency in order to be powerful. They need you to vote for them. And that from that reason, you need dependency. And how do you get that? You give free things away, or quote-unquote free things. Nothing is free, but you give free things away on the expense of other people to welfare recipients instead of having another viable option, which is private charity do it instead of welfare programs. And this is the argument for private charity. Roughly each year we have $600 billion spent under, especially in Obama. It's been around $5 trillion in the last 6 years that we've spent on the poor. And not to mention they're worse off after, I mean, now compared to 2008. But we spent around $5 trillion. And compared to what private charity does, private charity, so roughly around, the rough estimate, the average between those five, the last decade has been around $600 billion comes from the public sector as far as welfare funding and whatnot. Annually, the private sector through private charity gives roughly $300 billion to private charity each year. Well, you might say, well, Christian, that's double. The public sector has double the money. We need them there. Right, because we're how are we gonna live off half? This is the difference. In private charities, the rate of money, all the funds that actually get to the poor, are anywhere from 70% to 90% of all the proceeds go to poor. They go directly to the people in need, as far as food banks, clothing, shelter, whatever it may be. So it's a fairly high rate, 70% to 90%, compared to the government. Right, the government is by far inconsistent in anything it does, but the highest rate that the government has ever been, as far as the rate of getting the funds, the percentage of funds that goes to the poor and the welfare recipients, out of all the funding it gets, at the most, it gets 30. It's around 15 to 30% goes to the poor. So if you take that into account, you take, okay, 15 to 20 to 30% of $600 billion compared to 80 or 90% of $300 billion, it's roughly the same. So you're going to be getting, or a little bit more for the private sector. And the reason is because the private sector, there's incentive, there's risk. I don't want to get into this over and over again. It's a very generic argument. So that is why we are against the public sector giving these things, because they don't have the right intentions. The private sector, if it's run by churches or private charities, they all have incentives to help, right? They do these things as nonprofits because they want to help. They have a desire to help other humans that are in need. The public sector does it to get dependency. They need the votes. That's why they always give things away. It's with every other country in history. That's what they do. They give you certain things, just like the farmer gives, irrigation and food and shelter to the farm animals because they give them a great profit. You need to have some conditioning to make them dependent on you so they can give you the things you need in return, which are votes in this case. So that is why libertarians believe that these welfare programs, we are not against any of these kind of safety nets. We just believe it's better to do it voluntarily. You don't need to force other people to do it because it's immoral to do so. And it's a quick kind of thinking about this is if you believe that since welfare programs exist, now that we're a democratic republic, that means that the majority of people believe that we need these kind of programs. And if the majority of people believe that we need it, like we have right now, obviously, because we vote for people who put these things into place, if the majority of people believe that we need it, then it will be done without the government involved, because the majority of people do it, they need it, they want it, right? It's the majority of people who want it. If there is a minority of people who want it, and that's your argument, you'll say, well, too few people want to give to private charity and want to help the poor, then we would never have these programs. So it's either there's a majority of people who want it, and that way we don't need them to do it, or there's a minority of people who want it. But that, in that case, we wouldn't have these programs in the first place, so we'd vote the kind of policies out of office, right? So that is our general belief. I can talk about this for far longer, but that's the initial belief, and that kind of gives you some ideas of to kind of research it, if you're, you know, that's what's kind of hanging you up as far as the poor goes, because we all really want the poor to be better off. The question is, what eliminates poverty the fastest? And it's the free market. The free market, as far as reinvesting capital and making the prices going down, letting more people buy it, having greater purchasing power to buy greater things, and have a higher standard of living. It all comes from the free market and not the government. The government prohibits it and stagnates it and stops any real progress, as we've seen with the Great Society programs and other welfare programs as far as the poverty rate goes. The second question I get is, what about the rich? Are libertarians, because we often hear this, that libertarians are just, we love corporations, we're for the rich. Well, I always give this quick response before I get into the real thing, which is, well, if we love the rich so much, why don't they donate to us? Because there is not one corporation that donates to libertarians. They don't. I mean, the Koch brothers donate to conservatives, but the Koch brothers are not libertarians. So the libertarians get like virtually no funding from, you know, corporations. Why? Because the government aids and creates corporations. They create monopoly. The government is, if you want to give more money to the government to stop, to, you know, to limit the rich, well, who inhabits the government? The rich, the well-off. And what if people aren't in the government, what happens? Well, the rich, they have special interest groups. They pay off, like, the pharmaceutical companies. Now they did Obamacare, the automotive or banking industries, as far as 2009, 2008 goes. As far as the bailouts and the auto bailouts and obviously the bailouts of the banks, these are all special interest groups. And libertarians, we don't want any special interests. I'll get into what the differences are right after this question, but we are not for the rich. We are for individual rights. We don't believe in special interest groups. We believe they are an abomination. They should not be allowed. That the best way to get rid of special interest groups is to get rid of the power of the state. If you get rid of the power of the state, there will be no special interests to give away. So there won't be any concentrated power there, and the rich can, you know, they can deal with their lives and not be corrupt. There won't be any corruption, if you get rid of it. So that is our general belief as far as the rich go. So the last question I'll finish off here is, what would the libertarians have done differently over the last decade? Right. So we'll start off with leading up to the crash of 2008. Well, first off, libertarians, either they are Chicago economists or Austrian economists. I belong to the Austrian school. And either you believe in the Chicago schools, which is a minority of libertarians. They believe that instead of doing like a quote, you know, if you've heard of the stimulus package that Obama did, that's what we call fiscal stimulus. That's the government spending. What Chicago economists believe as far as the Depression goes is that the Federal Reserve, it's called monetary stimulus. They believe that the Federal Reserve should print money instead of having the government spend. The Austrians have a completely different view, and they believe that the government should do nothing, and that, in fact, the government and the central bank and the influx of credit causes these kind of depressions. So as far as we look at the cause, as Austrians, we look at the cause and don't just look at the result and see how do we fix it. We look, well, what caused it in the first place? You need to know the cause before you can do anything about it. So as far as the 2008-2009 goes, we would have not bailed out the banks or the automobile industries. If you are going to make bad decisions, you're going to be embedded in the government and believe that you don't have any risk, that you can just make these terrible decisions as far as toxic loans and whatever it may be, that you should fail for that. You should let other companies take those assets and put them to more productive uses. So we believe that the bailout should not have happened, and the stimulus should not have happened. The stimulus will just make things worse, as the Austrian perspective goes. The stimulus, what the Austrian business cycle theory, in a quick brief description, is there's an influx of credit from the central bank that artificially lowers the interest rates, which confuses entrepreneurs into business owners. And that, what the low interest rate means is that it's supposed to mean that people are saving. So that means that they want to spend later compared to now. So business owners invest in long-term experiments such as housing construction, as in the housing boom. And that's what the boom causes. It's the boom of people doing long-term projects that the savings aren't really there because they're just artificial in credit and inflation. And at the same time, consumers see the low interest rate, and that makes them disincentivized from saving. They instead consume. So you have too much consumption, and at the same time, malinvestment. They're investing in long-term, and they should be investing in short-term because people are consuming right now. So that causes the boom, and then when they find out that the resources have been misallocated and it's been a mistake, the bust comes. They have to take all. It's the kind of analogy that works well is that you build and you start building 10 houses. The estimation that you can build 10 houses, the savings are there for 10 houses, and the builder gets to the seventh house, and they run out of bricks. And what that means is obviously the savings aren't there, so they have to all the energy and the labor and the resources that went into the idea that the houses were going to be built have to be somehow liquidated, right? So that's where the bust comes from. So as far as the stimulus goes, the stimulus is just the government taking more money and putting them into special interests as far as pharmaceuticals or banks or Solyndra, right? Special things that aren't demanded correctly. And it just furtherly increases the malinvestment. So the stimulus is the exact opposite of what you need to do. So we would have not done the stimulus. And those are the main two things that we would have done differently. And obviously the second gigantic thing is the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. Libertarians were against that war. They're one of the very few groups that were, you know, truly against that war and against the war that we have in Libya, and then the proposed action in Syria that they were going to do under the Obama administration. We were against both of these as compared to the liberals who were against the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. But then when their guy did it, as far as Libya and Syria, they were off. There was nothing to be said. The libertarians were consistent in both of those positions, saying that all of these wars were not necessary. We don't have the money to do it anyway, and that it should not be allowed to happen. It creates massive death that is really irresponsible and not useful. We did not need it. It was a waste of money and a waste of resources. So there are the few questions that I get a lot that I hope can kind of start to make you think about libertarianism a little bit differently and understand the fundamentals. Tomorrow we will have Fabian Lamas on for talking anarcho-capitalism. I'll be back tomorrow with him. So for that, I really thank you guys for listening, and bye for now.